It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Hello and welcome to On the Ledge podcast. It's time to sit back, relax, and let the On the Ledge vibe wash over you. I'm Jane Perrone, the British houseplant expert, journalist, garden writer, and chief cook and bottle washer here at On the Ledge Towers in the fine county of Bedfordshire. This is episode 164, and I will be chatting this week to the force of nature, that is Travis Cooper, aka Plants to Coop on Instagram, the creator of the hashtag Plants and Poses. He's also a dancer and choreographer and a jolly nice man. And in our wide-ranging chat, we cover everything from plant purges and why they're a difficult but great thing, why posing with your plants is something you really must do, and which anthurium Travis recommends for first-time growers. And I'll also be answering a question about the orientation of your house. Intriguing, eh? Thank you to Sarah for becoming a crazy plant person this week, and to Henriette, who upgraded from legend to superfan. And in my office right now, there's a massive stack of envelopes, labels, cardboard tubes, cards and more as I put together the Patreon offering that's going out early next month. So if you're a Patreon subscriber at the legend or superfan level, start watching your mailbox or letterbox with great attention, because something will be coming, I would like to say hopefully the first week of December, from my good self. I apologise in advance for my hideous handwriting. And you've just about got time to sign up and get that special festive mail out. You need to sign up as a superfan or a legend by the end of play, that's midnight my time, UK time, on the 23rd of November, which is Monday, so not much time. That's in order to guarantee that you'll get the mail out. If you join after that, I will try to get it out to you if I can, but I can't guarantee it, because as you can imagine, writing about 200 mail outs is quite a lot of work, so please bear with me on that. For all the details about my Patreon offering, do check out the show notes where you'll find the links and information you need. And a quick correction before we dive into my interview with Travis. I mentioned a new plant from my plant haul from the BCSS member who was downsizing their collection, and I called it Euphorbia platygona, and I said it was embodying the spirit of 2020. Well, it is in fact Euphorbia platyclada. I did actually know that somewhere in my brain, but I went with the label that I had, which was actually wrong. So I will correct that in last week's show notes. And I might actually, I don't know if I'll correct the actual episode or not. But anyway, just letting you know, Euphorbia platyclada is that stick-like succulent that I was talking about in last week's show. Nobody mentioned it, so I guess perhaps nobody was too bothered. But I do like to try to get these names right. One of the wonderful things about making this show is just being able to message somebody and say, hey, let's have a chat. And by the wonder of On the Ledge podcast, it happens. And I just loved chatting to my guest this week, Travis Cooper. He is such an interesting guy. Our conversation went all over the place. It got a little bit confessional at one point from me, not Travis. And so I want to run it in full and uninterrupted here on the show. And I'll follow on with the Q&A to wrap up this episode. Please, please, please do go and check out Travis's Instagram account while you listen, because if you're not already a follower of his, then it'll make a lot more sense if you're looking at his posts and seeing the kind of thing that he does, his whole plants and poses hashtag, and also his work with the melanin fairy, which is what we're going to be finding out about in this episode. So do go and check out at Plants de Coupe, that's Plants, DECOOP, as you listen. And of course, as usual, the show notes are a fount of information, so do click on those and have a look through those as you're listening too.
So yeah, my name is Travis. I am not only a lover of plants, but even more so recently starting to really feel my connection to them. So I said this the other day, actually. I said to someone, I was doing a consultation, and at the end, I was talking about how our awareness of our plants is probably the most important part of plant care. And I said, well, everything comes from the earth and goes back to the earth. So we are plants and plants are us.
Yes, I like it. Well, it's great to have you on the show. I have been loving your presence on YouTube and on Instagram for quite a few months now. I can't remember exactly when I came across you, but what I really love about what you in particular do is you bring so much joy to showing off your plants. And I think this is something that particularly a certain slice of the Instagram population could learn a lot from, because I hear from so many people that, oh, like, I'm really comfortable showing pictures of my plants, but I don't really want to take a picture of myself. And I just love the freedom with which you are able to express yourself with your plants. So that's a starting point for us, perhaps, to talk about plants and poses. How did that kick off, and what does that mean to you?
Oh, I love this question. So plants and poses, it started back, I'd say, once I first created my account. I did a very similar thing that as most people did. You show your plant, you maybe show your hand in your plant, but that's it. And it didn't take much time for me to realize that there was something more that I wanted to do with it. I'm a trained dancer and a trained yoga instructor and dance teacher and just general lover of movement, and always have been. And so it just felt natural for me at some point to get in front of the camera and play with what it would be like for me to create these shapes while also highlighting certain plants. And so really, plants and poses started off as just a way for me to be creative in a way that felt really good for me. And what I noticed is that while it was getting a lot of great feedback, I had this sense that people wanted to, by what they were saying, wanted to do the same thing, but didn't know how, or felt like maybe it was going to be stepping on my toes as I was kind of creating this thing. And so I then started the hashtag. And even made this little slide on one of my posts to talk about what it is, so that people could maybe feel a bit more comfortable getting in front of the camera, being creative, and just showing the beauty of our own physical bodies with these beautiful plants that we love.
Yeah, that's a really great message to get across, because I think so many people are just uncomfortable with themselves physically and don't really like to look at themselves. And I think the same is true with our voices. I know that when I started on the ledge, as I said in my last episode, I really didn't like the sound of my own voice, which I'm sure lots of listeners will find surprising, because I get a lot of emails from people saying, oh, I love your voice. But at the time, I really had a problem with my voice. And it took me many years of hearing myself in interviews to really come to terms with it and actually love it myself. So it's a really powerful thing, isn't it? And that freedom is something that we should be taking full advantage of, and that's what you do so well. Tell me a bit about your plant collection. Are you an aroid addict, or is there a particular kind of plant that floats your boat?
Yeah, as time has gone on, I definitely have become more of an aroid addict. And what it is, it's something about seeing how much they change over time, how much the leaves change and get bigger as they mature. But don't get me wrong. I have a ton of, I love snake plants. There's something about a plant that is just loyal and resilient. So aroids, I'd say, is where my passion and drive is. And there are also so many other plants that I do adore.
Well, that's good to hear. And has this been something of a recent passion, or have you been into plants since you were tiny?
I would say that there's always been a connection, right? There's always been this connection to plants. From a young age, I can remember the feeling of being outside, of getting interested in plants growing in the ground and trees and whatnot. And I would say I didn't really dig into that more until I was an adult, and it was April of 2019. So it's been about a year and a half at this point that I've really started to collect plants, if you will.
And you've recently had a bit of a plant purge. How painful has that been, or is it still ongoing? I mean, this is a common thing now. People get loads of these plants and then perhaps for different reasons decide to divest themselves of a few. But what I was impressed about with your plant purge was that it was really well organized. Like, you had it worked out exactly what you were going to do, and you knew exactly what your parameters were and how you're going to do things. And I thought that was really great, because it made it very clear for people who were interested. And, you know, but has it been painful to separate yourself from some of these plants?
Oh, that's so funny, because I've said this several times as I've been purging. It's been relieving a bit, actually. My choice for letting go of these plants is for a much bigger purpose. I still love my plants. I'm only keeping, sheesh, about 20 out of over 100.
Wow.
And it's been a relief realizing that, oh, okay, I don't only have to give my attention to 20 plants now, and I can appreciate and really fully invest in these 20 right now. It's also been really sweet. Every time I've seen someone take a picture with these plants that I've spent so much time with, it's been so sweet for me to see that and know that this life will get to go on in someone else's care, whatever that may look like, right? Whether they kill it or it thrives for 20 years, right? And then I would say there is a part of me that has had a hard time letting some go, but the intention was for me to really, in a larger way, let go of unnecessary things right now in my life. And so it's been really interesting to see the ones that I've had this kind of tug of war with, like, do I really want to let this go? And so that would, I'd say, have been the only struggle, is the ones that I've really had to decide, okay, it actually is best for me to let this go. Even though there's a part of me that may want to hold on, if I'm going to continue to practice this letting go, I think it's best to let maybe this plant go.
Yeah, it's a powerful thing. I think giving away plants or selling plants, whatever you're doing, however you're doing it, it makes you really think about what that plant means to you and your ability to look after things. There is a real collector's vibe going on at the minute, where there is a sort of thing of, I've got to get every species of this genus, I've got to complete my collection. There's always another plant on my wish list, which is fantastic, and, you know, me more than anyone else can say I have fallen prey to that many times. But there is a kind of a darker underside to that, of people causing themselves a lot of stress and possibly expense by seeking after the next hit, the next plant hit, rather than enjoying the plants they've got. I mean, do you think there's something in that?
Oh, 100%. And I, like you, I've fallen victim to this. And I speak about this pretty openly oftentimes to people, so that maybe it can be normalized, and so that we're not, you know, falling victim to this and then feeling ashamed of it, therefore not being able to truly see it for what it is and possibly do something about it. I definitely think that Instagram itself, right? Like, when you have something that is constantly in your face, informing you, it's not just what we may like to think, like, you know, coming into our mind and then disappearing. It's taking up space in there. And the more that we see it, I think we're more prone to fall into this trap of greed. And so, yeah, I think there's something there. And I think, honestly, we can continue to talk more openly about it, because, as we'll see, a lot of the prices right now are kind of outrageous for plants. And a lot of that has to do with greed, right? That people not actually maybe pausing and seeing, do I want to pay this outrageous price just because I have it? What's the larger effect of me just because I have the resources buying this plant, right? There are much more, there are ripple effects that are happening that if we don't take a moment to pause and check in, affect the masses more than maybe we recognize.
And this was something you kind of relates to your own plant purge in that you indicated in your information that you were going to prioritize Black and Indigenous people of color as purchasers of these plants because for reasons we should all know about, but perhaps don't, historically disadvantaged group, that you want to kind of like allow them to be, come to the first top of the queue. There seems to be a fantastic community built up around Black plant owners. Is that, has that been a source of support and joy over the last few months and the tricky time that the America has had?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. I did not expect to have such a sense of community with Black people and plants as I've ended up having. When I first joined this Plantstagram, if you will, I didn't really see anybody like me. And that was actually, that looked like me. That was actually part of the reason that I decided to get in front of the camera is because I didn't see anybody who looked like me. And I wanted to let people know that Black people do this as well. And over the course of time, from the time I started my Plantstagram, which was October 23rd, 2019, I'm pretty sure. From that time, moving up to when the Black Lives Matter uprising happened, I discovered there was a whole slew of us out there. And one thing that I have found a lot of gratitude in is that around the times that the uprising started, there was this community coming together of the Black plant community. I think just in general this happened, but there was this really coming together in a way so of us to support each other. 'Cause there was this, you know, while there are thousands of us out there, why is it so difficult to find us, right? And so the idea, not to speak for other people, but what it's felt like to me is that if we come together in masses, we can more collectively be seen and do something. And so the Black plant community, honestly, has been such a huge support for me. I never expected to feel so welcomed. And the Black plant community has been the biggest source of feeling like a part of this plant community that I've experienced so far.
That's the wonderful thing about plants is that, you know, there will be a group of people who fit your demographic who are also like plants, you know. So wherever you are at, you'll find your people and make a wonderful community. That is the wonderful thing about it. Is there a sense of positivity going through the Black houseplant community as more podcasts emerge, more hashtags emerge, more Instagram posts emerge, that kind of like you're coming together and something great's happening?
You know, I can't speak for everyone else, but what I can say is that this sense of community and coming together amongst the Black community, the Black plant community, has definitely, I think, just created a support for each other that has allowed us to, for me, I'll say this, I felt so confident in creating and releasing things that are, that I'm passionate about as it refers to plants, because I 100% know that if nothing else, I have the Black plant community to back me and say, yes, keep going. And so I think if anything, I don't know if positive is the word, right? But I would say that there's definitely a sense of support and grounding that has that I feel is stronger than it was prior to the Black Lives Matter uprising.
I'm always wondering, look in wonder at my plants, and just I'm amazed by the level of decoration and adornment that so many plants are able to do. Has that inspired your own looks that you've chosen for plants and poses? It literally is this amazing outpouring of confidence and beauty and style. that is mirroring back on your plants, which I absolutely love. Does that, sorry, that's a really rambling question, but does any of that make any sense or resonate whatsoever?
Yes, yes, it does. So I haven't done it recently, but I used to do this, and I can even do it right now. I'm sitting right in front of my plants where I'll look at my plant and just take in the beauty of it, right? There's so many plants that I can look at that I, when I just really pause and look at them, I'm like, holy crap, this is absolutely gorgeous. And then what I'll do is I'll go, well, if I'm a part of the earth, that's in me as well. So what I'm feeling right now, what I'm experiencing right now is also within me. And so what I would say is with my plants and poses, 100%, because just the fact that I take moments like that with my plants, there's no way that that couldn't spill over into a project that is my body with these plants. And to be more specific, there are moments, for instance, like I have a picture on my Instagram with a philodendron pink princess.
Yes, I was just looking at that. I'm so jealous. I don't own that plant, and I just, it's gorgeous. Have you purged that one, or is it still with you?
I have purged a piece of it, and I'm going to purge another piece of it tonight. And then wow. I'm going to also keep a piece for myself because I really do enjoy that plant. But yeah, for instance, that picture with that plant, it was definitely, the look was inspired by that plant. If you see another project that I've been working on recently, there's a lot of like deep green and deep blues in the fabric that I'm wearing. And you'll see me with a regal, an Anthurium regal, right? That very much mimics those same colors and feeling tones.
I think that one of the wonderful things about what you do is that you just take that almost childhood spirit of dressing up and playing and bring it into an adult realm. And as somebody who's a classic English person and a little bit reserved, it's very inspiring, but also a bit scary to me. And it reminds me of when I was a teenager. And I'm going to tell you something now that I don't think I've ever told anybody. When I was a teenager, I really, really wanted for about 6 months to have a waistcoat with one of those Victorian pocket watches with the chain and everything. And I really, like, I don't know why, but I really had this desire to dress up in that. And of course, I never did it because I was a reserved English teenager who was a complete dork. So I never did it. But I think back to that and think, I wonder how my life would have been different had I felt the confidence just to go, you know what, I'm a teenager. I can do whatever I like. I'm going to get myself a pocket watch and a waistcoat and I'm going to try it. It makes me wonder how my life might have been different had I had that freedom to express myself at that age.
The question that comes up for me is, what would your life be like? How would it be different if you did that right now?
That's a really good question. You know what? How I express myself now is through brooches. Like, I have a big brooch collection. I don't know if you saw before the video went off. Today, I'm wearing a really big sparkly spider brooch, which, long story, but is kind of a political statement, actually, here in the UK. Anyway, I'll put a link to it in the show notes if anyone wants to have a look at it. So I kind of express myself through those brooches. So like every day I'm always wearing a brooch and it'll always be different. And I mean, it's very low key. I mean, it's not a dramatic thing, but I have become a little bit bolder, I think, in my dress. But you're right. Why not embrace it now? I'm not sure I'd still want to do the waistcoat and pocket watch thing. Yeah, you're right. Why not just try to do something different and allow maybe plants to be an inspiration in that?
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I think, you know, what comes up for me is creativity. When we are younger, before the world gets a hold of us, if we will, it's just natural, right? It just flows through us. It just happens. And then we start to have all of these things that we trying to check all these boxes based on what we've learned that we're supposed to be. And it can easily dumb down our creativity. And part of why I did Plants and Poses is because it's pretty much going to be all adults that would come across my page and my work. And I wanted to offer the invitation for people as adults to go, oh, I can be creative still too. Just because I'm not a kid anymore doesn't mean I'm not creative. I always have access to creativity. It'll just look a lot different than when I was younger. And I'm so passionate about creativity, especially in adults, because we're expected to be so serious, right? There's something that as we get older, we're supposed to just drop the playfulness, the fun. And it's like we're trying to live on one side of our being, right? When we are so expansive, there's so much happening within us, and we're supposed to live this like one side of us. And so for me, creativity opens up this new realm that I think actually informs the other parts of us in a new way if we allow space for that creativity.
That's so true. And I would also credit in the last few years, the LGBTQIA plus community has had an amazing impact on everybody else, if I can put it that way, in teaching us about how we can play with our style, can incorporate all of these things into our daily lives and enjoy expressing that. I think that's come across in so many things that have come into our understanding that we might not have ever seen before. And I think that for me is a really, really powerful thing. This leads us on to the Melanin Fairy. I've been watching your Instagram posts with great interest, building it up. You've been teasing us and building it up. What can you tell us about this amazing new project? And I mean, these stunning photographs that you have taken. I'm fascinated by the jewelry that you're wearing. And also you've got various plants featuring that wonderful anthurium. Please tell me that's staying in your collection.
100%. I couldn't let it go. Yeah. So this project, oh my goodness, it definitely has become much bigger than I thought it was going to be. When I first thought of this idea, it was after a friend was talking to me, and I had been doing these plants and poses photo shoots for a while. And I'd never really gone into a photo shoot with an extensive concept. I usually would go in with a loose idea and kind of let the moment guide me once I started photographing, changing, adding different plants, taking different plants out, adding different rings or sunglasses, and just really playing in the moment. But after talking to this friend, they said, oh, I really miss doing photo shoots that were conceptual. I always had so much fun. And then I went, huh, what would it look like if I really spent time conceptualizing a photo shoot and went in with a very specific idea? I was like, let me just sit down and see what comes out. And so I took my notes out on my iPhone and I just let my mind run. And the first thing that came out was the Melanin Fairy. And I had no idea what that really meant, but I was like, I just see this as a thing for myself. I don't know what that would look like, but that sounds awesome. Fast forward to the actual conception of the project, what I learned was that this was a part of me that as a kid and even leading into my adult life and even currently is with me. It was this feminine energy that's a natural part of all of us that had been suppressed, that this character through my mind in that moment was really just wanting that part of myself to just speak. To say this feminine energy has a place here, and maybe through this character, we can allow that energy to come forward and we can explore what that means. And even after knowing that, what it's actually helped me come up against is the way that I have embodied the word feminine and feminine energy based on what society has taught me. And really what this project is now, in addition to this beautiful art that I've created, it's a project that on my Instagram, through storytelling and questions that I'm asking to everyone else and a conversation I'm going to have on my IG Live with a friend of mine about this, it's investigating what feminine and masculine are. And what does that look like inside of us? How important is it to actually know them within ourselves? Or is it that we actually, you know, maybe defining them isn't important? So it's just all these questions that I'm really starting to come up against that this project has brought to me that I didn't expect when I was just sitting down going, oh, Melanin Fairy, write it down.
It's amazing. I love the jewelry that you're wearing. My sister is a jewelry designer, so I have to sort of mention this kind of thing because I'm sure she'll be listening and interested. Was that designed by somebody for you, or where did that come from?
So the jewelry itself was actually, so I had a stylist on the project and a seamstress. The seamstress made the like tunic dress kind of garment. And then the stylist actually found the jewelry and bought it from somewhere, from different places.
It looks like it's been made specially for this project. So well done to the stylist. It's just absolutely amazing.
He's amazing.
One thing that occurred to me while you were talking about sexuality, and I was having a discussion with my daughter the other day, my teenage daughter, which kind of, she said afterwards, you've blown my mind. We were talking about sexual reproduction in plants. And I was explaining to her that, and I actually got a book out that explained this because she was just so blown away. I was explaining to her that, you know, some plants are female. Some plants only have female flowers. Some plants only have male flowers. Some plants, some species have male and female. Some species have bisexual flowers and also a male and female flowers, or just one or just the other. She was going, whoa, I can't believe
this.
She was blown away. And I think that's a really interesting thing that ties into what you're doing here and is so hidden, because obviously like a flower is just a big old sex sign, right? I think we've still got this Victorian mentality about plants that it's all kind of like all hidden away and we're not going to talk about that. But of course, that's all going on in there.
Right. What I'm hearing as you say that is that if we as human beings would just look out in nature, it would give us all the answers, right? It's these limited beliefs that we tend to have about how we're supposed to be as human beings. But there's so much fluidity in nature, right? And if we can acknowledge that we are a part of this, then we can look at nature and it teaches us so much about how we actually operate and what is true within our bodies that maybe these limited beliefs are keeping us from really noticing.
It's one of the reasons, you know, why I'm kind of always a bit disappointed that more houseplant people aren't into flowering houseplants, because you know what? I've just got a Paphiopedilum orchid that's flowering, and you just look at this flower and it's like raw sexuality going on there. It's like this big meaty lime green flower, and it's just like, wow, looking at the different parts of the flower and how it's put together is just really amazingly inspiring. So yeah, more flowering plants, please. That's what I would say. And where will you be taking the Melanin Fairy? Is it sort of, are you finding your way with this, or do you have a planned path that you're following?
It's not planned. I'm really letting it guide me. As I'm learning things about what this project is really teaching me, I'm letting that guide where this goes. I don't know where this is going to end up. And yeah, I like it that way. It takes a lot of the pressure off of me having to produce something that is perfectly finished and thought out. It's actually just letting this moment guide me, because obviously there's more to it than I even realized from the beginning. So if I just continue to let it guide me, it's gonna unfold in a way that maybe can't be thought out, that just has to happen on its own time. I'm very much trusting the process right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure also that you're getting feedback from people on Instagram, which might be also, you know, adding thoughts to what you're doing and giving you more ideas, and that wonderful kind of feedback loop that you get when you do engage with a community.
100%. Every time I pose a question, that I have posed a question in the caption of these pictures during this project, oh my gosh, I'm getting so many awesome responses that are taking me further into investigation within myself. And then it will inform the way that I caption the next post and what I choose to do even after that. So yeah, definitely a feedback loop that's been really more of a community project than I realized too. It's actually very informed by the people who are participating in this.
Now, can we just talk about Begonia luxurians?
Oh, so pretty.
Can we share the pain though? I don't know whether you've been struggling with this. Mine, I had a really big one last summer and it went down like a lead balloon over the winter. It's gone. It's a beautiful plant, but it's so hard. Have you had any success keeping one alive long term?
Jane, it's dead.
Oh, you it see, I feel better. I feel better now.
Oh my gosh. It breaks my heart because it is absolutely stunning. And I just could not figure out how to keep it happy. Ugh. Begonia in general, honestly, though, I struggle with begonias.
I do as well. In fact, somebody's just sent me a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous pink spotty begonia, and I'm looking at it going, oh, God, the pressure is here to keep this going. I've got some, like my beefsteak begonia is my like real, you know, OG begonia, which is just so easy. But yeah, I've got different struggles going on all the time. But I have to say, I'm kind of glad you said yours is dead, because I feel like I just don't know what I could have done wrong, because it was just such a big plant and it was doing so well, and then disaster. But you know, you got to keep trying. And I guess this is tying into the vulnerability, but also the kind of keep on keeping on mentality that, you know, we need to adopt when we're traveling through life and also through our plant ownership.
I love that. I love that. Because if we look out at nature, it's going to keep on going whether we as human beings are here or not, right? It keeps on going. And so what a great reminder that resiliency is actually built into us as part of the earth. So yeah, I love that, Jane.
Yeah, it is. It's ups and downs, isn't it? I mean, there have to be ups and downs. I'm currently panicking because it's going to be really cold here tonight, and I've got to go out to my greenhouse and try and bring in a few more tender plants that need to come inside. And it's a constant battle. You're in North Carolina. What's the climate like there? How do your plants, do you have a lot of stuff inside to help your plants get through the winter in terms of grow lights and propagators or heat mats or anything?
Absolutely. So my story, I've not heard anybody else has like it, though I'm sure there are people who have a similar story. When I first started caring for plants, it was in an apartment that only had north-facing windows, and there were major obstructions outside. So when I would take out a light meter and like turn all the lights off and just measure the foot candles, I would get, if my plant were pressed up against the window, at the peak of the day, it was like 150 foot candles, 200 foot candles, which is very low. That's like low light at that point. So I still wanted to grow plants. So I ended up investing in grow lights, a lot of grow lights. So my journey with plants actually started with grow lights for the first year. So when I moved into a place where there was a lot of natural light, I was like, oh, I don't like this. I can't control the light outside. Yeah. It changes throughout the year and I don't have as much control over it. And so, yes, I have a lot of grow lights still. I'm currently in my plant room and I'm surrounded by grow lights and humidifiers and a little mini indoor greenhouse. So really my plants for the most part keep on going throughout the winter, almost as if nothing has changed because of the extra controlled conditions that I give them.
Now, people are always looking for grow light recommendations, which I can't give Americans because I'm obviously in a different continent. So what grow lights do you have and which ones do you swear by?
I would say the ones that I swear by the most, it's a company called Monios L. It's MONIOS-L. And I actually got mine off of Amazon. They're long bars that I hang on shelves. And those I have, I think at this point, like 20 of them around my plant room. Those I swear by. And then there are also just some great grow bulbs that can work really well. I can't remember the name of it. If it's okay, I could give it to you afterwards if you wanted to put in the show notes.
It's interesting how much it changes if you get a different apartment or house with different windows and different orientation. It really does change everything, doesn't it? And suddenly, as you say, it's not so controllable anymore. I'm just considering cutting down a tree, which is dying anyway, and thinking how much it's going to affect the light in my greenhouse. And I'm going to have to put up some shading because it's going to take away the shade. And yeah, there's so much to think about, isn't there? But you're right. A light meter is a good thing to have to hand when you're trying to get a grip on what plants you can grow and what's going to work. I mean, you're also, as well as your wonderful plants and posies, you've got a practical edge too. And you've obviously been really killing it with your wonderful gorgeous aroids. Any aroid care tips? What's you seem to have a nice line in terracotta pots. Do you prefer potting in terracotta, and have you got any particular tips on those gorgeous aroids?
Yeah, I would definitely say for me, terracotta or orchid pots are my go-to. Now, I know people who can grow aroids in plastic or glazed pots, but for me, I am the king of overwatering. I tend to overparent. So really the terracotta pots and orchid pots are for me and my style of plant parenting. The biggest thing for me, and this once again is partially because of my heavy hand in watering, but I love a really chunky substrate that maybe I have to water more frequently, but really gives the roots a lot of space to breathe. And my roots usually go off in my plants, I think because of how much air they have. So for me, it's usually a mixture of coconut chips, charcoal, some sort of bark, and sphagnum moss. And that usually keeps my aroids nice and happy. And for anthuriums, what I've noticed, a friend of mine told me this and I've tried it on and there seems to be some truth to it, is that with my anthuriums, specifically the velvety ones, oftentimes they are told to get bright indirect light. And I've noticed if I go more in like the medium close to low light spectrum, they give me bigger leaves faster. And a friend of mine told me is from some of the old heads, if you will, old growers that he talked to, is that the idea is if they're getting like just enough light, they'll produce bigger leaves so that they can photosynthesize better on a larger surface area. Whereas if they're getting a perfect amount of light, they won't usually produce as big of leaves. So I've kind of found that to be true. Not kind of. I have found that to be true thus far in my experience. So that's something else that I think is kind of a fun tip, especially for anthuriums.
That's a great tip. I mean, do I own any anthuriums? I don't. I'm just trying to remember if I've forgotten anything. I don't own any anthuriums. If you could suggest one anthurium for me as a non-anthurium owner to start with, what would you recommend?
Oh, I love this question. I would say Anthurium vichyi.
Oh, yeah.
That was my first anthurium, and I put it in a plastic pot with very dense soil, and it's still alive. It's been very, very forgiving. I feel confident that I have watered it too soon. I feel confident that I've waited too long. I feel confident that I haven't given it a ton of humidity, and it still has been thriving. So I think a really forgiving anthurium is a good place to start, and I would say the vichyi is where it's at.
Okay, I shall bear that in mind as I attempt not to buy any more plants. Although, you know what? What I love about the plant community is that people send me stuff. I do some lovely swaps and also get sent things by people, which is amazing. And I do like to, you know, as much as possible to do swaps. And it brings me great joy to receive things and also to give things. It's a really good feeling to pass that on. And I love the idea of your plants from your plant purge now hanging out in all these other homes around your state and no doubt the rest of the US. Have you heard any feedback on how your plants are doing that you've purged?
So the purge is very recent, so people haven't had much time to grow them, but I have had a lot of people just get so excited about having these plants, some because they are rare plants that I intentionally sold these plants at a much cheaper price than market price just to offset the insane pricing right now in the market. And then there are some people who I think just have a sense of me and who I am and the love that I put into my plants. And so I think that made them feel excited to have them. So yeah, there's definitely been a lot of great feedback, but as far as growth goes, they haven't really had them long enough yet to see much growth.
Oh, time will tell. I'm sure that much love will be poured into them and they will be doing really beautifully. Well, Travis, it's been amazing to talk to you. It's been a wide-ranging conversation. I hope my sort of slightly curveball questions were okay.
Totally.
But it's really cool to talk to you. And I mean, there's so many more things I'd like to talk to you about. Dance about, oh, so many more things, but it's just wonderful to have this chat. And as ever, I'm just learning so much from others in the plant community, and I hope that will always go on, because that's what's so wonderful and refreshing, that there's just so much incredible knowledge and information and fun out there. And that's another aspect of your work that's just so refreshing. I can always smile when I come and look at your Instagram. So thank you very much for joining me today, Travis.
Jane, thank you so much. And I've already told you this, but this is a really special moment, getting a chance to talk with you, because when I first started my journey, especially in the first year, Jane, I played your podcast like every day, all the time. So I'm very familiar with you and your work, and I appreciate you so much for choosing to have me.
Thank you for that compliment. That's very nice to hear. I'm terrible at accepting compliments, but I'm going to accept this one with grace and say thank you very much, because that means a lot. And it's lovely to make this connection.
Thank you so much, Jane.
If you want to find out what that book about the biology of flowers I showed my daughter was, or more about that sparkly spider brooch, or indeed the picture of Travis with his philodendron pink princess, head on over to the show notes now for all that information and more.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
And now it's question of the week, which comes from Colette. And Colette is looking to move house and wanted to know what would be the best orientation of a house for growing houseplants. Colette's house is currently west facing at the front and east facing at the back. Colette writes, obviously for a garden, south facing is great, but I would worry about the north facing aspect of the living room and bedroom being too dim for plants. Am I worrying too much, or is there some sort of ideal medium? Any help would be fantastic. I love this question. It's a really interesting one to consider. Even though most of us obviously can't choose the orientation of our house or choose a home solely based on the suitability for houseplants, it's definitely worth thinking about light when you are considering what your house is like for plants. I would say that east to west is probably the sweet spot for houseplants, because there are so many that don't like really full-on sun that you get from a south-facing window and would do better in an east/west orientation. That said, if you're into cacti, I'd probably say north to south would probably be better. Why does orientation matter? Well, if you think about the sun's movement across the sky from east to west, if your house is south-facing, then generally it's going to get the most hours of daylight. If your windows are south-facing, they're going to get the sun for many more hours of the day than a north-facing window, and the sun's going to be shining directly in. East to west, well, east-facing windows tend to get the sun in the morning, and west-facing windows tend to get the later afternoon sun. And that afternoon sun does tend to be a bit stronger. So in the kind of hierarchy of orientation, if I can put it that way, we're probably looking at south as being the sunniest, then west, then east, then north. But it does depend on the size of your windows. If you're living in an ancient cottage with tiny windows, then an east-facing window is not going to offer the same amount of light as an east-facing window in a brand new apartment block that's got floor-to-ceiling windows. If you've got things like Velux windows in the roof or glass-roofed areas, or just really big windows, that will massively help with your plants. And I must, of course, add that if you're living in the Southern Hemisphere, all of what I've just said is obviously completely wrong and is in fact the other way round. I'm sorry if there hasn't been much help to those of you in Australia, New Zealand and elsewhere. But yeah, just flip the script and the same principles apply. My house, in fact, is north to south, and at the front is you've got a nice big bay window which gets the sun all day, and then at the back is north facing. But I'm lucky enough to have a glass roofed conservatory there. So the other thing to look out for if you are scoping out new properties is deep windowsills, I think, are always fantastic. And I say that as somebody who has hardly any windowsills in my house. How did I choose this house, eh? I guess there were a few other considerations other than my houseplants. It's great if you've got some sheltered areas that are covered over but outside. So porches, covered balconies, covered patios are great for so many of the cacti and succulents that we love. If you're in a temperate climate, many of those can stay in a really sheltered spot. The agaves, for example, will absolutely love it out there. So you can have something that looks kind of cool and full of succulents without actually having to bring them in all winter. Depends on your climate though. I'm obviously speaking to people all over the world here. So look at the spaces that you've got and the light levels you've got, and then that's how you decide what plants you want to have. But if I was looking for a new home and looking at orientation in an ideal world, as I say, with the kind of plants I grow, east to west would be probably my preference. If you do end up with north facing rooms, well, obviously you can add grow lights, but also there are lots of plants that will do reasonably well in low light conditions. And do check out my episode on low light plants for more info on that front. I do hope that helps, Colette. And if you've got a question for On The Ledge, do drop me a line. ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com is the best way to get in touch. That wraps up this week's show. Thank you to my guest Travis for joining me, and to all of you for being lovely, lovely listeners. I love you all. Have a great week. Remember to keep moving, keep breathing, stay hydrated, and keep your plants close. Bye. Music you heard in this episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, Rasham Piditi Bakara by Samuel Corwin, and Whistle by Benjamin Banger. All tracks are licensed under Creative Commons. Visit my show notes for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.